Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, September 2nd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. Thanks to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, these tools are available absolutely free on the Internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for a little over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose not to or you don't have access to time to call in during the internet show and get support with a worksheet, and or if you don't have a support group in your area, repeated listening to those audio files can serve as a tutorial for how to get the most out of the worksheet process in the shortest period of time. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And it comes to me to say on this Friday that Michael and Jeannie have spent all of their own time, intelligence, money, and energy creating not just the internet show, not just the website, not just the app, but all of the revisions and fixes and updates for all three of those things. So while they don't demand any money from anybody, if you're getting benefit from these tools and or you have the financial resources to support that project, there is a donation button on their website, and they greatly appreciate all the types of help and support they get, including the financial. So feel free, if you have the resources, if you're benefiting from this work, to chip in financially. And or if you have a special skill set, perhaps related to writing copy or marketing or technical support, email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And let her know about how you have skills or resources that you'd like to use to help them further their various projects. So, we have a call-in number, and that's 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code, and we will have a conversation. And as I mentioned, we really appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to know how this stuff is landing on for you and is it being of use, because that's our goal. Our goal is to be of service. Our intention is to be of service. Area code 610. Is this Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Oh, I'm a moderate wreck, but very much helped by the tools. I wanted to say just a couple of things. One is one of the women in my Zoom support group has been listening to videos and podcasts by a man named Eric Gentry. I wondered if you had heard of him.
No.
Okay. It's about trauma, and I've only listened to a couple of them, but it dovetails. You're always finding stuff that dovetails with the work, and this dovetails with the work beautifully. Basically, he says, everybody, because we think we're separate from one another, everybody has one level or of another of trauma or PTSD or stress and anxiety. And he said he himself had terrible PTSD and stress, and he learned to handle it by simply asking himself, am I safe right now? And usually the answer is yes. Right now there is no immediate danger. And then to do a little breathing and releasing of tension in the body, which surely is in there when you're feeling stress. I can't say much more than that, except that it's just a helpful tool, and it's been very helpful to me along with the worksheets. Because I'm in, you know, the situation with my grandson, and also I have to go in for a medical procedure to see if I'm okay. I've gotten a bad test result, could be in trouble, and the tools help with that too. Middle of the night, waking up and doing the worst case scenario scene, and I am old, so I figure, you know, there's... Unlike Michael Rice, who figures we can live forever, and I figure he's onto something, but I'm not advanced enough. I figure, well, maybe this is the way I'm heading out. Who knows? I feel fine, and it may be fine, but I have been doing the kinds of worksheets that he does not recommend, which are mental worksheets in the middle of the night. I don't turn on the lights, but I just go through the steps, go through the pattern, and it's like an alchemical reaction. I usually just come around to being okay again. I've had to do quite a few rounds of this, but just maybe you might want to check out this guy. He's a little sort of rough around the edges, and he oddly enough, and it's irrelevant, but he has the same accent as my former son-in-law, who was the one who gave my grandchildren such a hard start in their lives. And so to listen to this healthy man talking about stress, that has been an issue too, is to get past his voice. You know how it can be. There may be somebody who
loves
a lot.
What's his name again?
Eric, E-R-I-C, Gentry, just the way it sounds, G-E-N-T-R-Y. And I'm only just new at listening to his work, and I don't have a lot of extra time. We're still doing this refugee project, and yesterday I missed
the whole show. Are you accessing his work off of YouTube?
Yep. Just type it in, and he has a whole course that's free. Start with section one. He has short ones that kind of give an intro, and I'm not sure how much more there is to what I've told you, but I'm eager to find out. And the friend of mine on the Zoom Mindshifter group that we have, she's a therapist too, and she's always doing what you do. She's just discovering new voices who are feeding into what becomes more and more like a shared worldview and a shared way of working on things. It's very exciting. So I thought I'd say hello and just tell you about those.
Wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And
when
is it you're expecting some word on this health issue you're exploring?
I'm going in on Wednesday for an exploratory and biopsies and things. And then I'll know after that whether I'm in the clear. I don't have any symptoms. It was just during a checkup, blood work and stuff. And the doctor suggested.
All right. Well, that's going to happen on Wednesday, you said?
Next Wednesday, yeah. I hope.
Right.
I probably won't be on the show that day because the appointment's at 12:30, so I doubt I'll be on the show, but I'll let you know. I'm hoping it's just a false alarm, but you know how it is. You have to deal with, scary things. And I know you could say something about the fact that I'm calling it scary, but I'm scared, so.
We'll invite anybody else who's listening to be sending extra loving thoughts and energies your way on Wednesday.
Thanks. I appreciate it. All right. Well, carry on, Dr. Tim. That's all I needed to say, and I'm eager to get back into the whatever you're going to do.
All right. Blessings. Thank you for the call. I will mute you so you can listen. And I'll just remind people that as we move forward, whatever it is that we're doing, if you've got a thought or a comment or a question, please feel free to press 1 on your phone, even if we seem to be in the middle of a monologue or reading from The Way of Mastery. And I'll either turn the microphone on instantaneously when I see it, or wait until it seems to be an appropriate time in terms of the flow of the show. And we're encouraging people to pipe up whenever they're feeling that urge, and trust the flow. If you get an urge, and again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581, and once you call that number, if you want to share something or have an urge to share something, press 1 on the phone. Where we left off yesterday was I was reading in Lesson 20, and Lesson 20 so far in the first few pages, the title of Lesson 20 is Vigilance for the Kingdom. And as I mentioned, it really kind of takes the core message from the very beginning of this work and puts it on steroids and says, what you desire, you experience. And we had some people in the support group last night that were mentioning how triggering that was. And some in a good way and some in a conflict way where they, it's almost as though they're feeling like a statement like that is telling them that they're failing because they don't like their life. And if you are one of those who has that kind of negative response stirred up when you hear something like the teaching from the Way of Mastery that says you only experience the effects of your own choice, nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you, and then, you know, 20 lessons later it says what you desire is what you experience, and whatever you're experiencing is something that some part of you has desired. And when you become conscious of that and you make a conscious choice to shift how you use that mind energy, then you will begin to experience things differently. And if, when you hear that, some part of your mind says, oh, they're telling me that I'm a failure or that I'm screwing things up because effectively because I'm not creating this brilliant, delightful, joyful life, please take a breath or two and use the tool of forgiveness as it's outlined in this work and or Dr. Michael Rice's work and or The Course in Miracles and dismantle that perception, because there is nothing in any of this work or The Course in Miracles or Dr. Michael Rice's work that's telling you you're screwing things up. The message is you are whole and complete just the way you are. Nothing of value can be taken from you, and nothing of value can be added unto you. And you have never been disconnected from your source. And we're just a lesson or so away from being asked to consider, in the beginning of the next lesson, a whole series of statements about how it's not possible for you to be without love, it's not possible for you to fail, it's not possible for you to suffer the dream of separation, it's not possible for you to taste genuine loss, it's not possible for you to be guilty of sin. So if some part of your mind, when you're hearing a lesson like this, tells you, oh, they're telling me I'm screwing things up because I don't like the way my life is unfolding, please take a breath. Hold it for a second or two at the top and slowly exhale down. Cancel your need to be right about that. Ask to be shown something else. Work to dismantle the perception you've created that you're being told that you're bad or you're wrong or you're a failure. And breathe and soften and ask what else might be here for you in this lesson. Because right after it says you experience what you desire, perhaps even more pointedly than it says it in the first chapter, your first lesson, then it talks about how you are in charge of a decision about accepting the truth that's true always. What is that? They talk about it in various ways, but the fact is you and your creator are one. You have never been separate from the flow of creation that gave rise to you. And then the next section says, so let's start observing your choices. Stop and look within your mind. Observe the simple activities of the day you've been living so far and ask yourself what you have desired in the day. And then the next section is titled The Key to Transformation. Assume complete responsibility. Responsibility has nothing to do with guilt or blame or shame or finger pointing. It's a tool I can use where I can go and look at my life and I can single out what I have chosen and what role I have played in interaction with the forces of creation unfolding in, through, as, and around me. And every time I end up in a situation that I do not like, then if I'm accurately defining what I had control over, and I see it as part of a pattern, then I can pick up the tool of responsibility, and it will give me the ability to respond differently in the next situation that's similar. The key to transformation is to assume complete responsibility. The text reads, the key then to transformation of your lived experience while the body lasts is to assume complete responsibility for how you are choosing to use the mind. Remember, only you can think a thought. Only you can have an idea. That idea cannot enter your domain over which you have complete dominion unless you have sent it an invitation. That is simply the way it is. It is a mirror of what the Creator is, infinite and perfect freedom. The Creator simply never deviates from desiring only the extension of love, the birthing of that which is like unto itself, which is you. Your will is joined with your Creator's will when you decide to birth only that. Only that which reflects love, which reflects the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Now, in a very simple way, this sounds like nonsense to most of us, because most of us have had the experience of having all kinds of thoughts bouncing around in our minds that we don't like. Whether we awake in the middle of the night with them or whether they're hammering at us, so to speak, when we're trying to go to sleep at night, or we have recurring negative thoughts about someone that we think has offended us, and we would love nothing more than to never think of that person again. But then we turn the corner and something happens that reminds us of that or has the same resonant frequency as some image we're holding in our mind, and we get flooded with those thoughts again. Michael Singer's work in his work, The Untethered Soul, is one book. The Surrender Experiment is another book. He had an online class titled Living from a Place of Surrender, and his new book published this year is called Living Untethered. And in each of these, he talks at different levels about what is your mind? Who are you? You are the essence of awareness. You are not your mind, and you are not your thoughts, and you are not your body, etc. And what is your mind? Your mind is this energy field. And what's in your mind? Impressions that come in from the outside through your senses, your thoughts about those impressions that come in, and your emotions. And he talks about how when we choose to like certain thoughts, images, sensations, activities, and we try to hold on to them and keep them there rather than just watching them flow through our life, we create a turbulence in this flow of energy through our mind. And when we push away some things and we don't want to experience them because they're fearful or unpleasant or they have a taste we don't like or whatever, we also create turbulence in our mind. So whether we're grabbing onto something, trying to hold it in place so we don't let it go, or we're trying to block the experience of something or push it away so we don't have to experience it, either one creates a turbulence, a disturbance in the flow of this energy through our mind. And that will give rise to all kinds of negative thoughts. So we may not be directly creating these negative thoughts, but as we decide to judge, to label the flow of creative energy, the flow of life, and say some of that is good and some of that is bad, that's how we create the turbulence in this energy field that we call the mind that keeps generating all these negative thoughts. And the great spiritual leaders and teachers, the great gurus, the great philosophers who have observed this directly and practiced things like meditation and practiced things like deep, radical inquiry, they've come to the same conclusion time after time after time, which is life is just this flow of energy. And we can choose to learn how to back up, distance ourselves from it rather than identifying with it, and appreciate it as this wonderful pageantry of life, bright colors, fabulously intense sensations, subtle sensations, smells, tastes, touch. And if we do that and we stay in the position of just observing and appreciating, we minimize the negativity, we minimize, if not eliminate, the suffering, and we maximize the enjoyment, the joy, the bliss, the appreciation for life as it is giving rise to us and as it is moving in, through, as, and around us. So to back up and just read these last two paragraphs, or the first two paragraphs in this section, titled, "The Key to Transformation is to Assume Complete Responsibility." The text reads, "The key then to transformation of your lived experience, as long as your body lasts, the key is to assume complete responsibility for how you are choosing to use your mind, the mind. Remember, only you can think a thought and only you can have an idea. The idea cannot enter your domain over which you have complete dominion unless you have sent it an invitation. That is simply the way it is." Again, you, what they're referencing here is you, is bigger and grander than your conscious logical mind, is more than your thoughts about yourself. In other words, it's more than your ego. You, the soul, you, the idea of a soul held in this spark of consciousness, which is part of the Christ mind or the one mind, you have at some level sent an invitation to these thoughts, or they wouldn't be there. The text goes on and says, "It is a mirror of what creation is, infinite and perfect freedom. The Creator simply never deviates from desiring only the extension of love, only the birthing of that which is like unto itself, which is you. Your will is joined with your Creator's will when you decide to birth only that which reflects love, capital L, love, only the good, the holy, and the beautiful. The mind, as you have come to know it, will deceive you into thinking, quote, well, if I live that way 95% of the time, then what the heck, 5% of the time I can do something else, close quotes. That is absolutely true. yet the more you come to truly desire only that which reflects the truth of who you are, you will be able to tolerate less and less variance within yourself. This is why when any mind truly begins to awaken, it becomes more and more painful to continue certain thoughts or behaviors that do not reflect the deep desire of the heart. This is why the gap becomes less and less, the gap of unconsciousness, the gap in which the mind tries to defend its choices and perceptions, until finally it rests in complete acceptance, complete vulnerability. It lives in complete innocence and no longer, please listen carefully, it no longer fears change within its system of thought. It no longer fears being challenged by another mind because it thirsts only for the creation of a thought system that can birth forth the good, the holy, and the beautiful. That mind no longer explains. It no longer defends. It no longer seeks to convince. It merely abides and gives itself over to the stream of love, capital L love, the energy of creation that would flow through it. Every idea presented by another mind becomes something to live with, something to digest, to see if there is a jewel within it that can add to the beauty of its own expression of the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Everything becomes grist for the mill. There is no longer a need to be in defense. The body does not tighten. The breath does not grow short. There is only openness, vulnerability. There is no longer a need to hide. There is no longer the need to be concerned with the perceptions of others, since a perception cannot harm you. There is only such love of self that nothing less than creation itself will do. So again, in this lesson, we speak on the theme of desire. We seek to bring you to the point of realizing that desire is the greater power of creativity. It is that which births your very experience. Desire is perfectly free. That desire, that power to desire, is within you, and you will never be without it. It is impossible to be desireless, since you can only find yourself to be where you have desired to be. Even if you are in deep and perfect silent meditation, you are there because of desire. Therefore, beloved friends, please decide this day to take responsibility for what you desire. Recognize that what you desire will be what you experience. Recognize that what you desire literally creates the pathway whereby you will experience either heaven or hell, peace or turbulence, love or fear. In each moment of desire, right where you are, you have just birthed an entire world. For out of that desire, right where you are, you will create your perceptions of everything from yourself to the farthest of stars, all in a split second, in a moment of timelessness. Part of the journey, then, the way of mastery is learning to transform your lived experience so that you enjoy it more and more and attach to it less and less and fear it not at all. So that last short paragraph, part of the journey then of this way of transformation is learning to transform your lived experience so that you enjoy it more and more, you are attached to it less and less, and you fear it not at all. There are many in your world who would yet perceive spirituality as a way to get out of the place in which they find themselves, not understanding that they can be nowhere except in their own mind. And as long as there is a desire to get out of where they are, they will remain stuck within it, because only love, and in this case the flow of life and creation, can heal. Only the open acceptance of love, of the creative energy, of all that is, creation, that some would call healing. Therefore, the way of healing, which is the way of transformation, requires that you turn back to look at your creations, to look back at your own mind, and to bring love to whatever is arising. You do that out of the desire to be the presence of Christ. And of course, it's a skill. It's something we learn with practice. We had a hand go up, area code 406. You're in the air. How can we support you? Who's calling?
Hi, it's Lisa. And I was just wanted to backtrack on your reading a little bit. There was some mention of how the unlike love manifests in the body. I'm not exactly sure what the quote was, but it was towards the beginning. And I had an experience.
Towards the beginning of what we were reading today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not during the reading, but I just, on Sunday, just completed my fourth Vipassana sit. So it's 10 days of sitting in silent meditation for 10 hours a day, although I didn't get around to the full 10 hours a day. That's a lot of sitting. On the final day, in the final, 30 minutes of the meditation, I had a fantasy of, I don't want to put it out into the ether, but I had a fantasy of hurting my former husband, who I still, despite all these years of forgiveness, still have it pop into my mind that he deserved these because of what, quote unquote, he did to me. And so as I'm sitting there in this meditation, this is the first time that I've actually ever perceived the immediate ramifications of my unlike love thoughts. And I immediately turned hot. I got a sharp jab of pain in my back, and my right knee from the mid-thigh to the mid-calf felt like it went on fire and was inflamed. Now, just out of curiosity, I reached down and touched it, and it was not hot to the touch, but I was burning up. And I knew from all the still point breathings and things that we've done over the years, and that, you know, that trauma and drama reside in this carbon-based unit. But I hadn't ever had such a quick response to an unlike love thought. And it was, it opened my mind. Let's put it that way. I'm just saying, maybe it's just true for me, but all of us need to stop our unlike love thoughts. That's all I'm saying. So it took me quite a bit of scanning, quite a bit of breathing. You're not supposed to make your breath different than natural, but I just felt compelled because of our work, you know, that still breathing, to kind of breathe through it and breathe it off. But it was quite an experience. Anyway, I just thought I'd share.
All right. Well, that's a powerful experience to have that very tangible, immediate feedback of valuing thoughts that are less than love, which sounds like, go ahead.
And much of the time I just watch them go by, although, it's challenging. One can't really stop a thought because it, you know, as it surfaces and it's, you know, just kind of puking itself up. But, you know, I still, I think in the back of my consciousness somewhere, you know, still I'm holding on to that I'm the victim of this relationship with my former husband. And at one point, you know, still maybe hanging on to that it's justified to have just a little bit of hate, you know, or just a little bit of unkind thought. And I can assure you, after this experience, the intensity
you got it
of
at
the
a
experience.
You got it at a new level that's not okay for you, right?
Right.
You got it
right.
At a new level that creates an immediate negative response in you.
Yes.
Of course, the core of our teaching is, all of these great teachings, is that when you're holding those thoughts and you think it's about somebody else, it's always about you.
Yes.
And so the forgiveness process has nothing to do with the other person. It has to do with figuring out what your goal is for the other person, canceling it and asking to be shown. Because somewhere deep inside you, you're resonating that you are unworthy, that you are damaged and broken, that you deserve to be hurt.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you want to see how the Michael Rice Reality Management Worksheet works so well and want to see a slightly different perspective on it, read and reread Lesson 3 in the Way of Mastery on forgiveness. And it's very, very clear in there that when you judge another, you have in that instance judged that you are guilty. It's always about dismantling my perceptions, my negative perceptions. And I use the word negative and the word false interchangeably, because when I generate a perception that says I'm bad or wrong, or someone else is bad or wrong, or that it results in my experiencing a tightness or a tension or a pain or an upset, I can instantly know three things. Number one, it's a lie or based in a falsehood. Number two, this is an old tape playing from some time in my past. This is not about the present moment. It's not even about the present conscious thought I'm having. And the third thing I can know instantly is, if I sit there and let that spin in my mind or speak or act from it, I'm only going to make my life situation worse, not better. I cannot improve my life situation by pouring negative energy into it.
Right. Yes, and it has also ramifications, that last statement has ramifications in my viewing of the outside of, or the perceived outside of my world, you know, the political situation in the U.S. right now, and I'm watching, you know, what seems to me to be so much negativity. And then, you know, obviously externalizing my own helplessness and hopelessness and deserve to be damaged and broken and all those things out onto one political party, which I know I'm doing, but it all feels like it all ties in, and of course it does. So anyway, I just figured I would add on to your reading.
I wonder if this part of my reading is what sparked your call, where it says, the mind that, as you've come to know it, will deceive you into thinking, well, if I live that way 95% of the time, then what the heck, 5% of the time I can do something else. The text goes on and says, this is absolutely true, yet the more you come to truly desire only that which reflects the truth of who you are, you'll be able to tolerate less and less variance within yourself. This is why when any mind truly begins to awaken, it becomes more and more painful to continue certain thoughts or behaviors, especially those that do not reflect the deep desire of the heart. Is that part that was resonating for you?
It might have been. I think it was actually before that, but it doesn't matter because when you read that part too, I thought, oh yeah, that's really good. So I can't tell you exactly what was said, but it was great.
Well, that resonates for me from your story because your thoughts, and you've had lots of them over the years about this person, ex-husband, et cetera, they're becoming actually physically painful for you in that meditation.
Yes.
The more you awaken, the more you practice extending the good, the holy, and the beautiful, the more you awaken to the realization that that's your true nature, and perhaps you decide to accept that as your purpose in life is to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful, the more that happens, the more it becomes painful to entertain thoughts that are unlike that.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, and Mark, who's called into the show before, who was the person who suggested that I go to Heartland in the first place, he has always told me, like for the last decade, about how his negative thoughts have appeared in his body and as certain ailments that he can feel directly traced. And I was like, I think you might be, you know, in my mind, I think he might be exaggerating. Oh no, I got it this time. So I'm actually excited, you know, by the opportunity to really come clean with myself again, you know, the next level, and, you know, and work through these.
Well, and the that last little bit you shared about, I think you said his name is Mark, who was sharing with you about feeling the physical effects of the negative thoughts, that brings to my mind how much work I do in my private practice with people who come in with physical aches and pains. And, of course, it's related directly to the John Sarno work, Dr. John Sarno, who coined the term tension myoneural syndrome, which means if I hold a mental emotional tension in my body with my mind and it gets lodged in my body, when it gets the muscles or the tissues to constrict or contract, if it even cuts off the blood flow as little as 10% to the tissue, it's enough to initiate excruciating pain. And I've lost count of how many sessions I've had with people who come in with shoulder pain or hip pain or back pain or foot pain, and we do a piece of work with energy work or a reality management worksheet or the neuroemotional technique, and they're just, sometimes they burst into tears because the pain's gone and it had been there for years. Or the restriction of motion is eliminated and their motion range is restored and they haven't been able to make that motion for years. And it's not a miraculous healing the way some people would think of, oh, you reattached a tendon or you healed a bone in an instant. It's about the tension myoneural syndrome. It's about excruciating physical pain that's getting initiated by this mental emotional tension, and that pain is enough to restrict the motion. And when that tension is relieved and the blood flow is restored, the pain's eliminated and people get a full range of motion in joints or in parts of the body that had been restricted sometimes for years.
It is, that must feel incredible for them and for you to watch it all in motion.
Well, it is something I've experienced myself very, very extensively, having to do with years of low back pain after a broken vertebra at L4, L5. And it's just, it's amazing how after I decided to look into that and actually try it for myself, and I quit doing all of the physical work, alternating hot and cold, electrical stim, deep tissue massage, after I quit doing all of that and instead started asking the mind and the body, okay, what's going on here? What's gotten triggered? And doing the energy work or the reality management worksheets or the EFT tapping or any combination of all of the above, the breath work, my experience for those things, and again, just like Dr. Sarno says in his books and on his video, people come in and they've got the x-rays and they've got the MRIs and it shows there was this deteriorated disc, there's this arthritis, there's this misalignment, there's this fractured bone. And he's not denying that those things are there. He's simply saying that's not what's causing the pain in the vast majority of cases. And so when you address the mental emotional tension, the negative thoughts, the rationalization of the negative or hurtful thoughts, then the energy flows differently, and quite often there's a release and a relief. Lisa, I'm going to turn on area code 248. You're in the air.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Tim. Thanks for letting me join the conversation, because I, see Tim, like what you're talking about, in my own private practice. And when Lisa said that she was like sort of accessing a deeper level of healing, I felt like I was really resonating that. And my input related to my personal example, over the last 2 weeks, when I went to go get acupuncture from a practitioner I've used in the past, I haven't seen in a couple years, and I'm asking her to help me address menopausal symptoms of belly fat and, you know, hair loss and things that, like, I know can be improved in lots of ways that I'm doing with my nutrition and movement and rest. But as far as acupuncture, you know, just another all of the above level. And the first day she did it was very pleasant, and I had great energy, and I even stayed up later than my normal client load and did notes to catch up. So I felt great. But the next day I got slammed on my ass for a week straight, and alternating between nausea and lethargy and just sickness, like an inner malaise. And then sometimes well, and then back and forth for over a week until it like peaked. And then I went for another session, and she kind of reversed it with needles again to kind of like get me more in balance. But during the physical process, that was one level, and then over the weekend, this weird emotional level came with feeling severe feelings of abandonment, so severe that it turned into panic. So it was this panic abandonment combo. And it's like one of these things that I've never personally experienced, but more like hear about it from my clients. I'm like, oh, that's what they're talking about, you know, kind of revelation, because I, you know, instantly apply all the tools that I tell them about breathing and tapping and, you know, regulating that and like helping the body eliminate it. But there weren't any thoughts attached to it. So then I go to, okay, this is pre-verbal, this is, you know, in utero, this is birth canal, like, I don't know what this is, because there's just all this, like, feelings of panic and fear and abandonment and loss and grief, and it feels too much. So
well, that
the reason
makes,
I'm...
That makes sense. I'm sorry, Michelle, that makes sense to me. Considering what your family has gone through, you know, just recently. I mean, I'm sure that crossed your mind.
You know what? Not until like I don't know, day eight, like way into it. More when I was talking about with a client and who knows me well, and he said something about my former dying, and I'm like, oh, maybe, never thought of, you know, but it. You know, but the part that's hard to access, Tim, like as it relates to the work that we learn and teach and all, is that because there aren't really any thoughts to go with all what this body stuff is, then it just feels a little harder to navigate to get on the other side, because almost like there's this residual chemical thing that I wake up with, like there's almost low-grade anxiety that, you know, again, breath sessions maybe, but like as far as like what to do with it other than ride it and be with it. So you like in true form, somewhere in there is a question.
You think there is? Wait, what is it? Did I miss it completely?
No, then usually when I ramble like that, you'll say that to me, like, was that a question in there somewhere? I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Well, I
because
think,
I'm very...
But I think what you just did is pose a series of questions and their answers, right? It's like it's all of the above. You got to ride it out. You've got to breathe and soften. And when I'm... When I put my mind energy, this is right out of what we were just reading. The Way of Mastery is trying to tell me here. When I put my mind energy into the negative thoughts, I'm going to create a very different experience than if I just put my mind energy into, oh, I'm going to take 100% responsibility. Here's the title of this section. The key to transformation is to assume complete responsibility. And again, responsibility has nothing to do with guilt or blame or shame. So I just say, okay, I wonder how I'm doing this. And I soften and I breathe and I open to be taught in the moment by life, by light, by love, by Yeshua, by whatever, the Christ mind. But I'm going to take responsibility for what I'm experiencing. And as soon as I do that and I step back and observe and question, my life experience changes. The pain may not go away right away, but my experience of it gets transformed. It's entirely different from my personal experience to be with a thought that says, oh, I wonder how I'm doing this, as opposed to, oh, darn, this isn't supposed to be happening.
So when you say it like that way, Tim, one thought that I had along the way that I didn't expand on was like, huh, I didn't plan for this. This feels like a summer intensive that I didn't sign up for, but it's just coming to me. You know, and it's sort of approaching like this is a 10-day, like, you know, lean into raw juice and water and just let your body rest and eliminate.
Right. But, you know, what you said, you didn't plan for it. And you didn't sign up for it, what you're talking about there is your conscious logical mind. And what the Way of Mastery is trying to tell us is that your heart, your soul, your essence, your spark of consciousness has signed up for everything you experience in this life.
Yeah, that would be a better way to language, taking responsibility for creating it.
Yeah, they're not talking about your conscious, they're not talking about your ego, they're not talking about your intellect, they're talking about your pure essence, your spark of awareness, that which is before
right.
you had an identity as a separate soul.
But if human Michelle can match up with that, it's better for me. My quote on my refrigerator for the longest time was, whatever the present moment contains, accept it as if you had chosen it. And, like, I want to integrate that in a way that's real, not like, you know, a meme on my fridge.
That would be the goal of the work.
Well, so funny. So this is great, Tim, because I have an hour break for lunch, and I ran to the bank to do some business. And when I came back to the car, I heard voices. I'm like, "Wait, I didn't leave the car in. Why is the radio?" I'm like, "Oh, it's from my phone. What's my phone? My phone, Block Talk. Who called Block Talk? Oh my God. Okay, well, this is happening for a reason. I must have mishandled my phone in a way that it called the favorites, and now I'm listening to Lisa. Oh, that's my Lisa. Hi, Lisa. And so thanks for letting me pop in. It was so unexpected and so great. Like, what a holiday, like, treat.
Well, I feel so blessed that you called. I really do, and I'm so glad to talk with Tim, too, so.
Yeah, nice. No, very good. And lesson three, that's my fave, right? That does rock out forgiveness in a way that makes me trust that work was channeled from Yeshua, because it matches Course in Miracles and it matches Aramaic forgiveness.
Sweet.
And, hey, Michael, I was going to say, see
hey.
You guys soon. Thank you.
Tim must have already dropped off. So
so we'd be
anyway.
Rocking along. How about you ladies?
Yeah. Michelle just dropped too, so I guess we move on to the second hour. Lisa,
sounds like
still
Lisa's
with us.
Still there. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
Good, thanks.
What's
I
exciting
just,
in
I
your world, young lady?
Well, Dr. Tim was talking about, he was reading a quote about, I don't know, about how the thoughts can, I'm paraphrasing it from what I heard, obviously, how it manifests in the body and can manifest in the body, our unlike love thoughts. And I was just calling in just to tell him my concrete experience that happened on my last day of the Vipassana sit, where I had a violent thought about my former, and my body turned immediately hot. I got a sharp pain in my side, and my knee from my middle of my thigh to the middle of my calf turned bright red hot and felt like it swelled up. It wasn't hot to the touch, nor was it swelled, but I immediately felt the ramifications of my unlike love thought. And that's the first time it's ever been within the second that I thought it. So it's real.
Well, probably with doing the Vipassana work over that 9-day period, you'd kind of shut down the squelch. And so you were able to see and hear with a lot of the noise out of the way. I know the first time I was at Heartland, when we first bought it back in the 80s, and I didn't go off the property for 3 months. And when I did, it was like everything was just noise. And I realized I kind of turned down the sensitivity in my mind because it's so quiet there. And all of a sudden, when I went to the city, it was just like, everything was just blasting. So, yeah, it's pretty cool when you start to pay attention to that. There was a cute cartoon that I posted on Facebook the other day, or reposted, that someone had set up, And let's see, I'm just looking for it here. And the quote is, the moment you change your perception is the moment you rewrite the chemistry of your body.
Yes.
And that's from Bruce Lipton, and that's exactly what happens. Yeah.
I'm definitely, I mean, I believed it. I knew it intellectually, and I feel sorry for the people, well, not so sorry, but I apologize to the folks that have already heard me say this before, but I knew it intellectually. You know, I've had Mark, I've had other dear friends tell me that they felt it, but I didn't have an experience like this. And so it's very real, folks, or at least it is for me.
I'm with you 200%. That's, you know, go to the opening words we start the whole premise with. And what do you hear? In the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh.
Yes. I'm a believer. Me and the monkeys.
Get your attention, right?
Right.
Cool.
So my next intention then is, even though it's always been my intention since I met you, you know, since I met you in Hawaii, to remove the unlike love thoughts from my thoughts, words, and actions. And yet, you know, there was still a peace and still continues to be, feels like, you know, just that little piece of I'm entitled to be a victim here. You know, life wasn't fair to me with what happened. And so my continuing intention is to eliminate that and know that I chose this, and I'm willing to work through it, and I'm willing to get it out of my system, and I'm willing to help other people come through theirs as well.
Well, that's awesome. I'm with you 100%. And I don't know anybody that's finished yet, so joining you in the process. And what I found is the more vital you become, the more you're able to open the deeper hidden parts of the mind, and that's when stuff really starts to show up. And I know that for me, the last 2 years of the 50 years I've been doing this work has been where I've touched into some of the deepest stuff and moved through some of the deepest things that I personally needed to work through. So it is a process for sure.
Well, and I had done a master cleanse, a modified master cleanse, because I had salad for lunch, but I did a master cleanse for 10 days before I went. And I, you know, did more of the yoga. I did more of the, you know, more of the forgiveness work, more of the, you know, just all of the right things. And so I was primed, you know, to have a great experience. And I did. So that was good. Speaking of that,
awesome.
I got to, you know, you only have a couple hours to talk to people, but these young ladies, because it's segregated by males and females, these young ladies kept presenting themselves to me. And I just, you know, with questions, they would walk up to me and they would say, hi, I'm so-and-so. And then they would ask me a question. And then I would go into the Aramaic, you know, the work, using so much of the verbiage that you have been so clear on over the decades. And they all looked at me and blinked, and they were like, thank you so much. And I'm like, you're really not supposed to talk about any other, you know, while you're there, any other. But I would say, you know, if you go to whyagain.org, you know, if you go to whyagain, and then I would just walk away. But the clarity in their eyes and the clarity of, and I can't even give an example because I'm kind of blank right now. But I just knew the answer that they needed to hear, and it was directly from your talk. So that was really, it was a nice little completion to the work. So that was good.
Right. You bring to mind the song, and when you realize that it isn't my words or my work, it's Yeshua, nobody does it better. You know, it's like, you know, there's nowhere that I've found the clarity until you get to that first century Aramaic master, and it's just, it's one of the things that gets to me is that it's not Sunday morning stuff. It's like where we live, and it's real. Just makes it that much more profound when you get to that, for sure.
Oh, I remember. It was this one gal, young, probably looked like she's like 23, and she was saying something about being angry with someone. And I said, you know, it's just, you know, an externalization of the projection in your mind. And I said, they might not even be doing it. Your perception might just be showing it to you, but they might not even be doing it. She almost went pale. She was like, then she says to me, you mean they might not be doing it? I said, exactly. It's your perception. And she was like, that is so good. And then I did the, you know, if the light for you is darkness, how dark will your light become? And I had the opportunity to tell at least three different young gals, like early 20s, that almost that same exact story. So I felt accomplished.
That's awesome.
Awesome for passing it on. Thank you.
Yeah. So. Anyway, I guess I'm
each one teach one, and the world gets healed.
Yeah. Yep.
Sweet. Awesome, young lady. Well, it sounds like you've been grounded in the teaching on a whole different level. So that's pretty fabulous. And of course, you know, one of the kind of most people think it's a joke when I say it, and a tongue in cheek line that I use all the time is you've got to be out of your mind. And it's literally true. And, of course, the Vipassana time is about quieting the mind, getting that thing to just shut up. and then we can hear all kinds of other things. You know, we then have direct guidance and instruction.
And then observe what gets, to borrow, you know, observe what gets puked up. I mean, just,
yes.
Just constant, just, you know, just observing and letting it go. But then I know to do the next level of stuff. But it was good. Yep.
Yeah, I lament for people who live in a world where this stuff is always being surfaced, always being resonated, but they have no idea what to do with it. They have no idea what it even is. And,
yes,
you know, it's a tough place to live. And unconsciousness,
well, my father,
is a tough place.
I said I was complete, but then I spoke with my dad yesterday, and, you know, within 30 seconds, he's, you know, just puking again on everybody and everything in his life to the point that I'm the only, me and his girlfriend, we're the only ones left. And I just, you know, the unconscious just, even though I've attempted to show him, I've attempted to talk to him about it before, he's just not interested. He just wants to be in pain, apparently.
So did he, in his conversation, give you any opportunities to learn forgiveness?
No.
Like, was there anywhere in the conversation where you held your breath?
No, but I...
Good for you.
I'm going to see him in October. But I'm
you'll probably get
the opportunity. The opportunity will abound, I'm certain.
Well, wonderful. We'll be holding the space.
Thank you.
All right. You have a blessed one. Appreciate you sharing.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha. Mahalo.
Okay, Michael, you actually have two hands up. One is Miss Susan, the other one is Michael.
Okay. Well, Michael and I are going to continue with the worksheet, but let's check in with Susan. We haven't talked to her in a few days, so let's just say hello and see what's happening for Susan and what support we can be.
Oh, thanks. I'll be quick.
Take what time you need, dear heart.
Thank you so much, Michael. I just need some good thoughts. The show that Dr. Tim did with Lisa was absolutely terrific, and Michelle came on too. It was about manifesting physically what things are going on, you know, emotionally.
Mentally.
And I've been using the tools, but I didn't stay enough ahead of it. I told Dr. Tim I had a weird outcome of a test. It was a colonoscopy home test, came out positive. So I have to go and get a colonoscopy, which I hoped I'd never have to do again. And I'm nervous about it because I hope there's nothing wrong. But I was thinking, with all of the stress in the house over my grandsons, and particularly one of them, and I have been doing the work, but I have also been having heightened anxiety, insomnia, and a sense of dread that the tools, I'm just using them like mad, and they are helping so much, but I feel as if I'm just about going under. I'm better now, but I am nervous, and I'd love prayers. Just, you know, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask for some specific outcome, but I evidently, on some level, unconsciously allowed all that stress to affect my body. And maybe I'm fine. There are things like false positives in those home tests.
Sure.
But, and I feel fine. And the tools are like alchemy. I'll wake up and I'll have the bad, scary thoughts and all that, and I'll just go into the tools. And Michael, I know you don't approve, but I don't turn on the light. But I go through those steps, and I get back to sleep because the forgiveness. Now,
you certainly have my support for that.
Okay. I just don't. I think Michael says you should get up and write. I'm not getting up and writing. The next thing I'm willing to do is to go through it in my head in the dark. Okay. So that's what I've been doing.
Perfect.
Anyway, that's my
Perfect.
Quick report and request for whatever good thoughts. I have a doctor's appointment for the colonoscopy on Wednesday coming up, and they'll probably know some before. And my daughter's getting married in a week, so I wanted to go fully joyful up to there and not be worrying about this.
Right. Is Jacob going to be there for the wedding?
He told me that if he goes, he's very angry at his mother. And he said, if I go to the wedding, I'm going to drink. And I said, well, Jake, don't come then. You just started school. It's a 10-hour drive each way. Your mother will understand. Write her a note. Just write her a sweet note. Be your nice Jake self. And I haven't heard anything. And my daughter said, Mom, don't say anything more. He probably won't come. I would love to have him there. But both she and her fiancé feel very vulnerable with Jake because you never know which one is going to show up. And he could really make the card. So I've had good talks with him. He's in the good Jake. He's happy to be at school. I haven't gotten enough confidence that he's okay because when he goes into the other Jake, he goes into Mr. Hyde instead of Dr. Jekyll.
Right.
It really gets very intense. You've seen some of those texts, and it gets like that.
Yes.
So I don't know if he's coming. And Luke also is planning to come, and he's sober. Yeah, okay.
Notice what happens when your physiology, just pay attention to the tensions and such in your body when you talk about him coming and the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Notice where the tension is.
Oh, yeah, right across my chest.
Is it in your gut?
And
your chest?
Well, it probably is. It probably is. I even drew a picture, and it's not very good to say on the radio show, but it's a rather graphic picture of balled up anger and frustration.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyway, thanks for the reminder.
So how about a mind shifter?
Sure. Get my pencil out. Go ahead.
It's easy for me
to
take on the anger of all my generations.
Wow.
comma, dissolving that ball of energy, being it out.
You're
calling get involved here to clear the energy.
Well, I am going to go through the regimen. So, you know, there's a lot of clearing out going to happen on the physical level.
Yeah.
Thank you. I got it.
The other thing that I'd suggest that you do, you should jump on Amazon and order a book called Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management by Bernard Jensen.
Oh, I know that book.
So you might look
and
look at some of the colon detoxes there. And, you know, one of the things oftentimes with diagnosis is, you know, you catch a 16th of a second in time of, you know, a person's day or week or month or year or lifetime. And there can be an energy transitioning through at a given time. And if somebody happens to be there with their little camera at that 16th of a second and goes, oh, my God, you know, the whole energy system is a state of flux. And as you're working on cleansing and clearing, those energetic patterns have to go. And so I'd support you being able to soften and open and let any of those energies go before you go and have this test.
Thank you, Michael.
Just softening, letting it loose, and letting go.
All right.
So that physiologically it's totally and completely clear, healthy, and stays that way.
Well, it's always been clear, so I'm going on that, but that's a great idea. Yeah, and I wanted to say, Jeannie asked me, is our Zoom group still going? It is so wonderful, our little Zoom group, our Mind Shifter group. The work is just cooking in there. And I just wanted to tell you that because I didn't know if you knew that we're still meeting every week.
Fabulous. And so if anybody wants to join that group, it's on Wednesday mornings at, is it 11 o'clock? Am I remembering correctly?
10:30 to noon. This coming Wednesday, I'm having a colonoscopy. So it's been canceled for this week, but it's Wednesday Eastern time, 10:30 to 12. Jeannie has the link already. I sent it to her.
It's on the website, right? Cool.
Yeah.
All right, dear heart, we'll be holding the space for you and the work that you'll do between now and then so that when you get to that wedding, whether Jake is there or not, and especially if he's there, that you're in a relaxed posture of just being the space and letting him do whatever he needs to do.
Much more to tell about him and some breakthroughs, but I won't now. I know Michael's on, and you're doing this amazing instructional worksheet thing with him. So over and out.
All right. Appreciate you. Cherish you. Blessings.
Thanks. Thanks.
All right. All right. Well, Mr. Michael.
Yes, my friends.
How are you, sir?
I'm here and blessed by listening to the ladies this morning on both sides of the show. Yes. Doing well, thank you.
Cool. Well,
everybody,
we completed
well
number three yesterday. So any other questions or thoughts on number three?
No. The only question I got going forward, you mentioned a quote by Bruce Lipton. The moment, and that's about all I got. I was doing something
else. Sure, let me just look here.
Do you have that right?
I actually, I put it in the notes for today, too. The moment
you
change your perception.
That's good
enough. Yeah, is the moment you rewrite the chemistry of your body.
So, you know, people want to separate the mind from the body. But let's imagine that I've got a silver dollar here. And I hand it to someone who wants to separate the mind from the body. And I say, okay, so now we've got this silver dollar, and on it there's a head, and on it there's a tail. I want you to separate them.
It's kind of difficult.
How do you separate the head from the tail of a coin? You can no more separate the mind from the body than you can separate the head from the tail of a coin. They're just flip sides of exactly the same thing. And where there is pain projected into perception, there is dis-ease chemistry on the level where we believe in chemistry, which is false, but where we believe in it, there's dis-ease chemistry in tissue. And where there is pain coming into the mind, it's going to reflect as dis-ease in a cell, in the cell that it's stored in. And there are no more, you can no more pull those two apart than you can pull the head away from the tail of the silver dollar. It can't be done. But what we can do is we can embrace through forgiveness that untoward energy from the mind that has impacted and created the chemistry in the cell. You know, and what they've proven in the cell biologist laboratory is that when you think a thought, that thought becomes literally a neuropeptide. Something that's supposedly non-physical becomes supposedly physical. A neuropeptide, an actual molecule that they can see. And then that molecule circulates around in the structure till it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches, and it literally an antenna. And when it lands on the antenna, then the tide, the literal chemical signature of the thought, inserts itself in the cell. And if it's of a disintegrative quality, if that thought is not based in love and you put it into a device that is designed only for thoughts based in love, then if you were sitting inside the cell watching that mind energy, that neuropeptide insert itself inside the cell, you would see disintegrative chemistry entering the cell. That mind energy on the level where we see it entering the cell is what we call chemistry. The truth is there's no such thing as chemistry. You know, if we listen to Einstein, he says on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. If there is, now maybe somebody smarter than Einstein knows better, but I'm going with Einstein. If there is no matter, then there is no matter. There is no chemistry, but there is energy, and our mind formulates the energy or shapes the energy into a quality that will either be of an uplift and strengthen the cell or of a degrading quality that will weaken the cell. And then when that thought that's resonant in the cell appearing as chemistry is resonated by an event, then that thought becomes the underlying structure of the perceptual construct that contains the pain. What we're looking to do with forgiveness is to collapse the end result perceptual construct that's usually a projection, shows us a picture where that pain chemistry in the cell is used, the thoughts related to that painful chemistry in the cell is used to build a picture of Bill out there that we're blaming. And that's why when I look at the goal that I hold for Bill and I cancel it, that perception about Bill collapses, and now I get to drop right into the neuropeptide in the cell. I get to touch right into that underlying unconscious energy. And when that is surfaced in the presence of active love, it dissolves. And that's forgiveness. The skill we're inviting people to do, to develop, to practice, is to develop the ability to breathe and literally access the neuropeptides that are stored in their structure that underlie their pain, bring them forward, uncover them from the structure, bring them forward and decode them as the thought that they are, expose that thought to love, and remove it. And if we don't ever develop that skill, here's what happens. Life brings us somebody through resonance who has the decoder. And we're not going to like what they do. Because when they have the decoder and they play out whatever it is that we don't want to deal with, that mind energy in the cell is going to be resonated once again. And if we're in denial, telling them how they did it to us, and it's their fault that we're feeling this, of course, I can't feel it if it's not in my cell. But if I lie to myself and tell them, yeah, they're making me feel this, then I have to dissociate from my direct experience of what's in the cell and come into indirect experience of it by building a picture of whoever it is I'm blaming. I literally massage that energy in my cellular structure that causes my pain, and I build it into a picture. My mind creates this hallucination that, oh, it's Bill I'm talking about, so this is Bill's fault. And then, you know, last month it was Harry's fault, and 10 years ago it was, you know, Hortense's fault, and 30 years ago it was somebody else's fault. In the last analysis, nobody has ever been angry with anybody. Nobody has ever been upset with anybody in their lives. But if one has anger or upset within them, they can put it into their brain's image of anybody. Anybody will do. When I cut out the middleman, you know, them, the religion of blame that makes it all about them, then I can begin to develop the ability to go inside of my own cell where the pain is generated by the disintegrative chemistry based in the mind energy that never belonged. I can bring that forward, become aware of what it is, and then when love is conscious, active, and present, simultaneous with me accessing that unconscious energy, pained energy dissolves and I'm freed of it. That's where the actual forgiveness takes place. And of course, when they talk about, you know, only God can forgive, we can't forgive. And that's true. We do our part. What's my part? I look at the situation. I look at the goal. I bring love forward. I cancel the goal. And love takes care of it. What's the other name for the creator that the scriptures give? It's love.
Yes.
Vengeance doesn't belong to love. Punishment doesn't belong to love. The only thing that belongs to love is love. Men made all that other stuff up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's remarkable, absolutely remarkable. Can we say then that, I think you were explaining, it's not so much a chemical reaction at the cell level as it is a transfer of energy.
Correct. It's a transfer of energy, but with our limited senses, it looks like what we call chemistry. We look at that part of the frequency spectrum, we say, oh, there's chemistry.
But
chemistry is matter, according to science. And if Einstein is right, the head scientist of the whole game, matter isn't real. It doesn't exist. We, with our senses, take certain frequencies, say, oh, this is in the material range, and this isn't. But truth is, it's all just energy. And so, yes, every bit of pain is an energy transfer. And when I live in denial, remember our definition of denial is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving in my cells, I'm in denial, and now I have to dissociate. I have to hide from myself that mind energy that's in myself creating that burning pain. I have to hide that from myself. Because if I look at it, then I'll know the truth, but I've already told my mind I want to lie. I want you to generate evidence that proves that this pain burning in my cell is caused by Bill over there. So that mind energy that's resonated by Bill certainly resonated it, that mind energy resonated by Bill comes up, and instead of looking at it directly as what it is, I massage it into a picture of Bill, and now my mind gives me a construct. Oh, yeah, see, this is all Bill's fault. And I'm still the one experiencing the pain, but I'm in an indirect relationship with my pain. And when I'm in an indirect relationship with something, I can't change it. I have to come into direct relationship. So when I cut out the middleman by canceling the goal, the whole projection on Bill disappears, and now I can go directly to that energy that's burning in my cell. I can bring it forward in the presence of love, and love, the creator, dissolves it.
And if we do it in love, it's integrative energy, and if we do it in fear, it's going to be, as you've mentioned, that's disintegrative energy. Is it that simple?
Correct. Correct. It's that simple. But of course, you can't really do it without the presence of love, because that's part of the definition of the process. Love has to be conscious, active, and present in order for forgiveness to take place. That's, you know, and when you equate, when you start to realize, you know, men have made up all kinds of images about the Creator, but the primary definition that I find is right on track is the Creator is love. God is love. So when I recognize that, and I can remember I was speaking at a church in St. Louis, Missouri. It was a Catholic church. And there were two archbishops there at the Wise. They came. There's a woman and her husband who was he was a former prosecutor in the city of St. Louis for 20 years. And they had invited these two Monsignors to come to my workshop. And afterward, their conversation was, could it really be that God is just love? That is God? Like, they were like, whoa. It's like, yeah, they meant what they said. Mm-hmm. And so when love is conscious, active, and present, love facilitates the process of forgiveness. If I didn't have love present, I don't have a clue how to move that energy out of that cell. I don't know how to turn hate and fear and rage into nothingness to dissipate and disappear it. I don't have a clue how. But there's a power in me that does when I'm willing to set it loose.
This is, as I mentioned, absolutely remarkable as you laid this out. It's beautiful.
I'm with you 100% on that one. It's mind-boggling when you get to it. And to me, the fact that it like at the deepest levels of life where we live, this is where this applies. It's not a Sunday morning thing. It's at the deepest levels of where we live when we take the tool and we apply it. And the changes that occur are just monumental.
Beginning to understand it more.
Yay.
It's amazing.
Well, it is a process, as I said yesterday, on to just this little last, 5-minute segment took me 35 years to learn what exactly was going on and how to explain it. It's just like, once you've got the brain cells for it, it's like, it's so obvious, it's so simple, but...
have to put the foundation in place so we can pave the road, right?
Yes, yes.
Mm.
So the next step is, now I've identified the goal that's driving my pained perception.
Yes.
And the reason I want to identify that goal, we look at that Harvard research, to repeat that for a second, is that what they identified or what they found was that when they hooked, they found that in a time frame where they could measure 10,000 units of electrical activity in the mind, the conscious or in the brain at that point, a reflection of the mind, the max amount of data that went into conscious perception that gained admittance to conscious awareness was 9 out of 10,000 bits of information firing. And so recognizing that that's evidence, and the only evidence we get to see is the evidence we give our minds permission to give us. So when I say, Bill made me mad, I'm saying to my mind, gather me some brain cells about Bill, put my mad into it, and show me that it's all Bill's fault. And I'll massage my construct into that projection. Projection being the use of mind energy internal to the cell and turning it into a picture that my mind shows me that I think is a picture of something outside of me. And that whole process is driven by my goals. So before I go into the step where I actually do the piece that I can do of forgiveness, and that is I cancel the goal, I want to make sure that love is active within me. Conscious, active, and present. And when I talk about love, I'm not talking about, the cultural mamby-pamby, sexual athletics, that sort of idea of misperception of love. But I'm talking about the truth of human life. And so at this stage, it can be really useful to just take a moment and tap into the moment where you first held a newborn baby. And tap into the essence of that newborn. And universally, I mean, it's a question both Jeannie and I have asked of tens of thousands of people all over the globe. What word would you use to describe that newborn? And virtually everyone's word is the word love or some variation on the theme of love. And ask yourself, is the newborn loving you or is the newborn love? We are made in the image and likeness of love. The newborn is love. Love isn't something we do. It's what we are. And so I want to bring me forward. I want to bring love present in my physiology for this next step. And so whatever it is, whatever image supports bringing forward present love, for me, I go back to the moment where my daughter was being born and her birth was at home. She delivered into my hands, or she, her head delivered, and she looked at me, her eyes just totally focused on my eyes, and she grinned. And that literally sent me into a state of love that I, a state of being that I had never experienced before in my life. So I go back to that moment and tap into that essence when I do this step. And the reminder to, that that is our source and that's our connection. When you look at the idea there at the end of step number 3 of the Rose and the Butterfly story, for anybody who might be listening that isn't familiar with it, it's a story I like to tell with this step of, you know, imagine we've got a rose and a butterfly. We give them each an ego. They meet. They fall in love. They have this wonderful time together. And one day the butterfly up and flies away. The rose, knowing that the butterfly is the most important thing in its life, uproots itself to give chase. What's going to happen to the rose? It's going to die. Why does it die? Because it made something more important than being connected to its source. Your source, my source, the source of every human being on planet Earth, present love. And when we make any goal more important than staying connected to that active present love, we're like the rose that disconnects from its source, from the ground, and withers and dies as a result. When we disconnect from love, we begin to wither and die. So this step is about remembering, becoming a member once again of the human race and functioning as conscious, active, present love, and making that a practice, taking time each day to spend in that practice. So before we go into the step 5, we'll just ask everyone to just step into that space of connecting to that presence of love. Notice if there's any tension in your body, where that tension is. Notice what's happening with your breath. Take your breath to any place where there's tension and just allow the restoration of present love to take place within your physiology. It's what every cell is designed to be fueled by. And breathe. Take just a couple of deep breaths and enjoy being in that connected space of active love. Do a little Darth Vader breathing. And then we move on to 5A, which is a two-part process. The first part is where you do the action step of forgiveness that we as humans are capable of. The second part is where recognizing that, you know, I metaphorically, you know, based on that Harvard research, talk about conscious awareness as the 9-bit mind. So if you think about a 9-bit mind, and then you think about an issue that maybe has gone on in your bloodline for 10 generations, like how much, what's the mass of information behind that? Who can even count? Am I ever going to be able to process with my 9-bit mind the underlying dynamic that was genetically passed to me and then environmentally reinforced in my family system when I was a kid from dad or mom and grandma and grandpa and their grandmas and grandpas, who knows how far back? Am I ever going to process that with a 9-bit mind? Not in a million years. But what Yeshua taught was that there is a power in us. In Aramaic, it was called Ruach HaKodesh. If you look down at the bottom of the page, you'll see the definition of Ruach. I usually just short form it to Ruach. It's a literal feminine elemental force in us that, when invited into activity, you know, we've got free will. That elemental force is never going to interrupt or interfere with our free will. But when invited into activity, it will, by definition, from the Aramaic, one, undo the effects of our error, and two, teach us the truth. If we're not so caught up in brain cells firing and information shooting up out of that cell that's beneath that burning pain and trying to distract us, but we're willing to breathe and let that loose, then that what was called the still small voice will literally, word by word, speak to us. Right down to, I've had times when I was given a word in the dictionary and given a page number that that word would appear on. And when I went to the dictionary, that word was on that page, and there was the answer to my question. That's how specific that direction will become if we allow it to. So 5A is... And basically, 5A is kind of a review of everything that's gone before. You know, when you think of this being presented in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, this 5A is a review of the first half of the workshop. When upset, my perception is built out of corrupt data driven by my goal, number 3. It is a limiting picture constructed from a max of 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing. Canceling my goal, my replicate mind's reality collapses and gives me direct contact with the denied and dissociated parts of my carbon-based memory, which projects and blames others for its content. And if you look at the asterisk, the replicant mind is all that the mind of man can do is just spit up whatever's in it. It will spit it up over and over and over again. It can only replicate what's in there. There's no way it can come up with anything new. So I'm with this step, I'm acknowledging how I've gotten to where I am, and that I need to do something. And there's a result I'm asking for here. So the action step is in bold, while holding love conscious, active, and present. So I'm remembering to keep that presence of love active in me. I now choose to collapse my mind's lies by willingly canceling my goal, the driver for number 1, C, 2. And I bring my answer word for word from number 3 down to this blank and number 1C. So you want to just transfer your answer, write your answer down in number 5 from number 3. As you're doing that, is it having an impact on your breath?
Yes, I believe I'm holding breath.
Okay, so notice that whatever this worksheet is about, it's an old habit to shut down the energy flow by shutting down the breath. You can always tell that I'm inhibiting contact with something in my mind, which is in my cells, when I hold my breath. And you watch most people, and they subventilate most of their lives. Conscious and keep love present as you do that. And then here's where you ask for assistance. You give permission. So before we go into the permission step, any thoughts or questions on step five? Does that all make sense?
All makes sense, yes. Basically, what we're doing is reiterating the goal from number three. Explain wonderfully how the perception is of corrupt data. And holding love conscious active and present. We're going to choose to collapse that with the help of Rukha Dikucha. Is that my following correctly?
Well, I'm going to collapse it by canceling the goal. Rukha's going
cancel
to do
the
following work.
Gotcha.
So it's my step to cancel it. And sometimes people say, well, Michael, how do you cancel a goal? I don't even know how to do that. It's like, yes, you do. You've just never termed it that way or thought of it that way or had the brain cells to understand that that's what we were doing. And I use an example with people of, well, imagine that right in front of your face, about 2 feet in front of your face, there's a red rubber ball. And what I'm going to ask you to do right now is reach out and take a hold of the red rubber ball. Would everybody that's listening do that? Michael, if you do that?
Okay.
So you have that imaginary red rubber ball in your hand, right?
Yes, sir.
Why did you do that?
Because I can see it in my mind.
Yeah, but why did you reach for it? Why did you do that?
As we're working through an example, right?
Yeah, but why did you reach for the ball? Why did you go through that in your mind? Why did you, in your mind's eye, reach out and take a hold of that ball? Or maybe put your arm physically out and take a hold of the ball.
Okay, maybe I'm missing. I believe that that's what you were asking, right?
Right, so is that why you did it?
As far as I can tell.
Okay, so you're missing a huge step in your life. And most everybody misses this step. That is, you didn't reach out for the ball because I asked. Say again?
I was gonna say, before you tell me that part, I want to make sure I understood the first part as I was writing. You asked to picture a ball in our mind. Correct.
Right.
And
then reach out and take a hold of it.
And then reach out and take a hold of it. Okay. That's what I wanted to make sure I understood that part right.
Yep.
Got it? Okay.
So then my question was, why did you do that? And as I understood your answer, you said, because I asked you to.
Mm-hmm. That's where I am right now.
Guess what? In a million years, I couldn't make you reach your arm out to take a hold of anything. I can't set a goal in your mind, and you can only do things that come from goals in your mind. The reason you reach for the ball is because you set a goal to do it. I framed the goal, but you set the goal. Nobody in your life. Now, if you had an authority that lorded it over you and you better do this, which most people have, they think that they do things because somebody else framed the goal. But unless I cooperate and set the goal, my body's not going to reach for the ball or do anything else. Every behavior is driven by goals. And only the mind that owns the body or that is in the body that's fulfilling the goal can set the goal to do it. All that anybody else can do is frame a goal for you. Really important thing to understand.
Mm-hmm. So you framed it, and I basically executed that.
Correct.
Went through the motion of that goal.
Right. And the only reason, and, you know, when you move your arm, you're moving muscles. In this work, we define behavior as a movement of a muscle. You never move a muscle that isn't related. I mean, if you fall over, that's one thing. But then even if you fall over, you've got a goal to upright yourself. So all the muscles that move to try to catch yourself and do all, that's all part of the goal system and the recovery and keeping oneself in balance and upright and safe. It's all a result of goals.
Which is our behavior. Which is our behavior. Okay.
Correct. All behavior is a result of the movement of a muscle. And the only thing that can move a muscle in your body is your mind. And the only thing that can move a muscle in my body is my mind.
That's going way deeper than what we're taught, isn't it?
That definitely the whole next level. Somebody who's sitting in cancel the thought, the torture chair says, no, I did that. Okay, you were going to take those pliers and pull my tooth out, so you forced me to do it. It's like, no, they can't force you to do it. They can say, I'm going to take these pliers and pull a tooth out. And at that point, I have a goal to keep my teeth in my mouth and to feel and to get rid of this pain. So I do the behavior. I have to set the goal. No one else can set a goal for you in your mind but you. And we live in a world where people are framing goals for us all the time. Churches, pastors, leaders, politicians, police, every authority in the world. Mm-hmm. And when we learn that we have to kowtow to authority, quote unquote, when we're children, people live a whole life of victimhood because they think that every goal they've achieved that's brought them pain was something that was caused by someone else, and they didn't know that they're the ones who set the goal. So through agreement, yes, you set a goal to reach for the ball, but your arm wouldn't have moved if you hadn't set that goal.
Mm-hmm.
I could have stood there and screamed and yelled and said, set that goal, move that arm, move that. Until you go, okay, I'm going to move the arm. The arm doesn't move.
That is a huge,
it's a life changer when people realize that one.
Thinking. Mm-hmm. Huge change in thinking there.
And every goal, this is a piece of information you won't find anywhere else on the planet. Every goal you set creates a stress. You know, people talk about, oh, that's a stressful situation. It comes from the same not understanding as we've just been talking about. There's no such thing as a stressful situation. All stress is created by goals. There are situations where I've got 1,000 goals operating, and so I say that's a stressful situation. But the stress doesn't come from the situation. It comes from the goals that I hold in my mind when I'm in that situation. And I can cancel those goals and be free of the stress no matter what the situation is.
And that, it just, I've never thought about it in that respect, but if I think about the ones that teach there's good and bad stress, and I don't know how else to put that right now, we have, if we're going to create a goal and get something accomplished, then there's some stress and motivation involved there, as well as the other type of stress that is a,
yeah,
is a
motivation.
Bad perception or wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Motivation is different from stress. Motivation is the difference between the way I perceive it and the way I want it to be. That's motivation.
Excellent.
My
that's
goal is the way I want it to be. They relate, but my goal is the way I want it to be. And there's a powerful saying that Yeshua has, and the phone's going to cut us off any second, so I'm just going to put this out, and we'll start with it on Monday or when you're next available, which I guess is later in the week. But Yeshua says, sufficient for the day are the evils thereof. And with that statement, he was teaching stress management. And we'll unfold that from the Aramaic in the next show you're available to take the worksheet.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, thank you both very much. And we'll continue
appreciate you.
Soon. Appreciate you all.
Okay. All righty. Blessings. Take care. Everybody, have the best.